اللهم اعطني نورا واجعلني نورا. وفي عصبي نورا وفي لحمي نورا وفي شعري نورا وفي دمي نورا وفي لساني نورا واجعل في نفسي نورا. اللهم اعظم لي نورا واجعلني نورا.
O God, make my heart a light and make my vision a light and make my hearing a light. And on my right side, place a light. And my left side, a light. Behind me, a light. Before me, a light. Above me, a light. And beneath me, a light. And increase my light. And make me a light. O God, make my limbs a light, and my skin a light, and my bones a light, and my blood a light, and my tongue a light, and make my soul a light. O God, bestow upon me this light, and make me a light. Amen.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الرحمن علم القرآن. خلق الإنسان علمه البيان. الشمس والقمر بحسبان والنجم والشجر يسجدان. صدق الله مولى العظيم. الفاتحة. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. آمين.
Thank you very much for your kind attention. I had thought of reciting the Dhikr for 2 hours, but my voice gave out. Apologize for that. So you're going to have to put up with me for a little bit. And I thought I'd give you some idea of the seven levels of the zikr and what they represent as a ladder to reach the beloved. Of course, maps really don't do you all that much good on the spiritual path. That is, they are, in fact, shorthands. Shorthand for actually traveling the path yourself with your very own soul toward the Beloved. This is because we actually know very little about the soul. We who do not have another job besides this one and spend 3 or 4 decades researching this topic have to confess at the end of the day, we actually know very little. Now, this is because the soul, in fact, is a vast, wide ocean whose depths are rarely plummeted. Your own soul contains all the secrets of the universe. It's like deep space. Deep space. And we know very little about it, in fact. This might be disappointing to some of you, but I have to admit that what we know is barely a fraction of the depths of the soul, which is so wide and vast it can't be imagined. But we do have little star charts. Don't they have those things now, Howard, to get you around, and they talk to you now?
Oh, GPS?
Yeah. It's very scary. They tell you turn right and left, something like that. But, you know, in the vast landscape of things, up and down, you know, 3 dimensions, 4 dimensions, I mean, you're just a map's barely telling you the whole story, although, you know, it gets you where you want to go sometimes. I notice they don't really work all that well, but these maps do. They've been around for a long time. And all we know is very little, we do use these maps in order to tell us 3 important things. And I think it's worth saying that where you've come from, where you are now, and where you are going on the spiritual path are 3 serious questions that are worth contemplating in depth. Because getting lost lying down or going 1 step forward and 10 steps backward just won't do. We're only given a certain number of days in this life. And to use those days at least to answer these 3 questions. Where have I come from? Where have I been on the spiritual path? Where am I now exactly? And where am I going? I think these are sensible questions that should be investigated. Because one must constantly ask oneself these questions in order to use the maps, the little information that we've got. And so I hope this little tale of 7 stages that are represented by the zikr can help you somehow answer those questions. I can't answer the question for you. I'll just give you the map. Seven stages begin with La Ilaha. This represents the Tullab. That means the seekers, the ones who desire. See, Sufis are funny people. They do use desire. They don't repress it. but they use it. They understand what desire is, what desire really is, down at the bottom of it all. Some people want money, some people want success, some people want food, some people want sex, some people want to be loved, some people want to stop hurting. Everybody wants something. The vast sea of humanity. A Jamaican Sufi, an old Rastafarian Sufi, told me, you know, Bilal, if you just sit and listen long enough, people will tell you all you need to know about what they want. This is true. They will tell you, if you listen carefully, what they want. Thank you, Abdullah. I want some water. Very few people in the world really want God, seekers of truth, tulab al-haq. There's a few people that actually want to find God. It's amazing. Even people who call themselves seekers are really seeking something else and get lost somewhere along the way. Yeah. A lot of distractions, as Llewellyn said this morning. Everybody wants something. The seekers want God. They want the Beloved. They stay awake at night. They learn funny languages and wear silly hats. They'll do anything to find God. It's weird. They'll travel hundreds of miles, spend lots of money. Oh boy, they won't invite me to Mega if I say that. They go to lots of weekends instead of sensible people who go boating or something. Sailing. That's what I imagine people do in upstate New York. But I don't know where. Oh, the Hudson. That's right. It's amazing. People really want to find God. They go to extraordinary lengths. These long, drawn-out things are willing to take incredible risks of getting harassed and going the wrong way, getting fooled. It's amazing. It always strikes me as rather peculiar thing to want in the richest country in the world, to want God. It doesn't make any sense. But that's me. There are people who are drawn to the Beloved, body, hearts, and souls. It's very strong. It's called himma. There's a word for it in Sufi language. Himma means something you desire very strongly, a deep longing that doesn't let you alone at night. It takes a hold of you and it draws you toward the Beloved. The deep desire. And these people are, they make good Sufis. They really do. In the poem, you see, the Sufis understand addiction very well, whether it's crack cocaine or the people I deal with in methamphetamines and so on in the prison system, whatever they wanted badly enough to do. We understand it. That's why the wine ode is so useful, because you actually understand what it is that desire is. It's the same desire, interestingly enough, that drives you towards Allah as drives you toward alcohol or whatever it is. It's exactly the same same desire, different substance. Isn't that interesting? It really is. It's one-pointedness, you know. The guys I see in downtown Berkeley, they have one thing on their mind. I remember there was a South African Sufi I met, and he walked off his dad's horse farm in Western Australia, in South Africa, and he walked to Lebanon through all of Africa, bottom to top. He was a tough old guy. He ended up working for Chevron, exploration drilling. I don't know if anybody wants to hear this. But my second name, Abdus-Salam, was named after him. That's how much I admired him. And he ended up in a jail in Lebanon for possession. Now, a jail in Lebanon, I mean, I work in the prison system in San Quentin. It's bad enough. But he said people were dying in the cells, and it was pretty rough. And he kind of saw the light in that prison and became a Sufi. Anyways, I was impressed by him because of his honesty. And he said he was so one-pointed in those days. And I said, you know, in my best University of California ivory tower kind of viewpoint, oh, South Africa, I hear that bromeliads grow wild there. My orientation towards the world. He said, could you smoke it? I said, no, I don't think you can smoke a bromeliad. And he said, well, in those days, if you couldn't smoke it, I wasn't interested. I'll never forget it. You know, they know what desire is. The whole world looks like an opportunity to get your fix. You know, that's what it is. And in fact, that's how strong the seeking is of the seeker. The whole world suddenly looks like a series of opportunities to find Allah. It really does. It looks different than someone who's addicted to cars or something. A few of those seekers reach the second stage. And I say a few because this is a dangerous business. This is your own soul. So be careful with it. Take care of it. Second stage is called Salik. Salik. That's the traveler. Like Saluk, that's a Salik. They're looking and they find the path. Ah, I found a path. Finally, I've been looking for the right teacher, the right group, the right mantra, the right zikr. So they find a path. Those are the Salikin. They find it, but depending on their desire, sometimes they get really excited in the beginning. Oh, I finally found the perfect it. But after a while, they still want to find God, but they notice a few things about the path that weren't, they didn't notice in the beginning when they signed up. Let's say that. That seems to be the new age shopping mart. Kind of fits into the culture though, doesn't it? You get what you pay for. So I'm on the path and it's working, but every once in a while, I kind of look over to the other guy's path. And I think, you know, in his path, he gets to eat pastrami sandwiches. You know, the thought comes up. I mean, it's good. I'm working on my path. I want to find Allah. But I just kind of take this ra'ra bil ayn, it's called in Arabic, this little glance and think, you know, that red hat is pretty cool. that those guys get to wear, you know. You don't have to look like the Ayatollah Khomeini or Bin Laden. You can look like... You look good, you know. It's interesting and you're exotic, but you're not threatening. Could be a Shriner, I don't know. It's like, they don't stop him at the airport, do they? You know, there's always something about those other paths. So, you know, you kind of go to their workshop or go to one of the, you know, it's sort of like you're on your thing, but you're traveling, but you want to take, like, a break and explore a little bit in somebody else's path. That's a salakin. A lot of people now, they have this way of, you know, you want to keep things open, your options and so on, and just look at this. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's great. It's a sandwich, is it?
I know.
It just gets me. This is a 10-year-old thing with me and Howard. Are we talking about prosciutto? You're teasing me now. He's bad, isn't he? Oh, God, you should have seen us in Morocco together. I think they were going to throw us out of the country after a couple of days of that. But something does happen to the heart of the Salik. And once in a while, it happens. It's like a spark. When they're sort of looking around, they find something and they get hooked. That something clinches them. Their whole life, called Marid, their whole will is suddenly focused on the path of choice. They are completely obliterated. Everything applies to the path that they're on. They're muridiya. They're absolutely focused. They're not glancing this side and that side. They're sure. This is it. This is the way. I've got it. Boom. I call the muridiya, the murids. And that's a very dangerous place to be in. It turns out level 3 is in fact one of the most dangerous places you can be in. It's in the book. Because it completely absorbs you. Your friends belong to the group. If they don't, you try to get them to join it. You know, you might make the mistake of telling your parents to join that group too, or anybody else that comes within 10 feet of you. You might try to get them in your group. It's the focus of your life. You live the group, you breathe the group, and you eat the group. That's your whole life. Everything is focused on the Marid. That's because you're totally in love. A necessary but sometimes painful place to be in, painful for the people around you. But you're sure. That's it. All doubt is removed. You're there. It's good. It's good. But it's only this third of 7 levels, you notice, so... By the way, you can't see that when you're a Marid. You think you found it, and you're it. Or your teacher's it, or your group's it. That's it. So that's good. That's like being in love, you know. It's just like being in love, you know. You go out to the bookstore in Omega Institute, and you look for books that she would like. In my case, it's a she. You know, you kind of look at the postcards and think, oh, she liked this postcard, you know? Or, I wish you were here right now looking at this view of the full moon. I mean, you're in love. Everything around you relates to the one beloved, yeah? And it happens to be the group that you found. And that's it. There is no other. For the Marid, of course, it's just great. You, for the first time in your life, you feel absolutely sure that you found it. It's good. I used to have a Marid test. I shouldn't tell people this because they probably won't talk to me then. It's called Nice Day, Isn't It? This is how I start out. This food's really good. My sheikh likes this food. What do you think of my clothes? My sheikh would like your clothes. Nice day, isn't it? My sheikh thinks it's a nice day. See? Everything. It's like pastrami. My sheikh doesn't like pastrami. So I'm going to join your group, Howard.
Here.
Oh, God. I haven't been in Omega long enough to start doing this stuff.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'll do it.
Oh, you're kidding.
For you, Howard. You have as much hair as I do, Howard. Okay. My sheikh. There we go. See how sweaty that is?
Yeah.
Is this thing on? Oh, no. You look so cool.
Oh,
that's,
man.
That's the end of your prosciutto, buddy.
That's it. It's the end of my getting on airplanes without being searched, too.
Yeah. I'll help you out. My sheikh will protect you from those people. I like the rose. Bend down, let everybody see the rose. Isn't that nice? Such good taste. I'm never going to get through this unless I straighten up.
Absolutely.
All right. There we go. That's great. Is that a Moroccan hat?
I actually don't know. It's something like that.
The Marids. They have no sense of humor, you know? It's like you're not really flexible when your sheikh is the incarnation of the Godhead, you know? I had a guy tell me every atom in the universe is controlled by my teacher. And I said, well, from a theological point of view...
Well, you know, one could accept that.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I can work it. But in that case, it was very hard for me to have a conversation about anything else. But it's love. It's just love. It's sometimes nauseating to everybody else who isn't into baby talk with your beloved. But, you know, it's. I better not do baby talk now. But there comes a time for a few of those Marids when there's disappointment. There is. It's a very painful time. When things start to shift, if things start to shift, and you see that your teacher is not the perfect being of the universe and actually has faults, uh-oh, what do I do now? Oh, no. I thought this was the shake of the universe. Whose every moment and word and thought and deed was perfect manifestation of God's divine bliss. Uh-oh. My sheikh in the Sudan, you know, I get there and I become a Marid, totally fall in love. Then I come to a lecture and he's chewing tobacco. I'm like vegan, vegetarian, everything is pure and my sheikh chews tobacco. This did not fit into my program of a being of light. He's Nubian, you know, he chews tobacco, or God knows what that stuff was. I never asked, and I never tried any, and I thought, oh, this is disgusting. He's chewing tobacco, and he's supposed to be a man of light, you know. Etc., etc., etc. You start to see things. The other Marids bother you a little more than they did before. Who also started out pretty good, but then they also think that they're the most favorite beloved of their sheikh. Then you start out, then you go to a board meeting. And you know, you're thinking, now, how did I get into this thing in the first place? Wasn't it like love of the beloved and everybody loves each other? This is pretty awful. These people aren't being even nice to each other. Look, they're shouting at each other about money. How could this happen in the perfect group with the perfect sheikh and the perfect everything? I know this hasn't happened to anybody in this room, but it happened to me. You guys are off. And then you have a choice to make. Here's the choice. You can quit and look for another teacher and go through the same thing again. You can become, you know, a talib, you know, a seeker, and then your path, and you're a little more cynical this time, so you're going to be stuck on the traveling part and looking around, and then you'll maybe fall in love again, but you'll have your eyes out this time, boy. Oof, never going to get in another weirdo group like that. It's a cult. Well, who knew? I thought I was smart. And then same thing. You go to the bottom, and you can do this the rest of your life. I know a lot of people that do. You know, up and down, up and down, up and down. The other choice is this, to be marad. A marad is something like a marid, but grown up. You finally learn that there is no perfect it. If you found the perfect it, by the way, you'd be dead. For instance, or you'd be gone and you wouldn't have a group to deal with. So you actually act like an adult. You grow up. You say, well, a little of this, a little of that. You take the good and you leave the rest. You won't be, you know, like Mr. Popular or Miss Popular. You won't be the closest beloved of the teacher, but hey, so what? You're grown up. It's called appropriate distance from the teacher. I teach it all the time. I'm an imam, so I deal with a few disappointed Sufis once in a while. That's it. You just grow up. You do the practice. Why? Remember that when you wanted to find God? Remember that first part? You found the teacher, but you didn't find God. Don't worry. Keep working. You know, it's the teachings. It's not the teacher. That's when a marad finds out that, you know, no matter who delivers it, it's teachings that work on you. It's a very tricky thing. Without leaving the group, you're there, but you're grown up. You don't have to sit in the front row. You don't have to be the favorite of anybody. You're with the teachings. And a marad grows up, and I always call it bumped up. This is a technical Arabic term. Bumped up. You get bumped up. The interesting thing is you get bumped up to the teacher's teacher. Remember, this is mysticism. You know, the longer I do this, the mysticism biz, or whatever it's called, I find out that there's really very few mystics in the world. Never mind the 60s and 70s and the New Age stuff and the paperback books on every religious tradition there is. There's actually very few mystics around. It's metaphysical. You don't have to be in the body, in the group, next to the person teaching you. This is a mystical connection. You can be in Nova Scotia, that's a nice place, and still, if the teacher isn't in Nova Scotia, and still get it. You can still change. You just work on yourself. You can check in once in a while, but you grow up. Your dependency, you know, is really over. What you're dependent on is the teachings, not the teacher. The practice, not the human being in the flesh. Don't forget, in the Sufism we say silsila. That means a chain of transmission. Anybody hear that word before? It's a silsila, okay? So who's in the body is just one link in the chain. Go up the chain. See who taught that person, okay? And the Naqshbandiya, conveniently named, you go up to Shah Naqshband. Yeah? Who was he? Who was Shah Naqshband's teacher? This is mystical. These people aren't in their bodies anymore. The teaching, not the teachers. You ascend as a marad in a very kind of mature way to meet those who aren't around. That's all. And you can go places, but you aren't really attached to where you're sitting or who's sitting with whom or who's leading what or all that stuff that Marines are really concerned about. And Marad says, yeah, it's gossip. Basically, who cares who's sitting in the room? I mean, do you see angels in this room right now? I mean, this has to be real, or it just doesn't work. You can't make this up. If you're sensing angelic presences in this room right now, you're jolly well on your way to being a Marad. And you don't care who wears the hat or who's talking to whom. I mean, hey, you're looking at angels. It's a little bit ascended. And the Messenger of God, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said, when you're doing a circle of dhikr, there's a circle of angels touching wing to wing. You know, the light from their... angels are made out of light, by the way. Their light descends in the form of Sakinah, which in Hebrew is Shekhinah, this indwelling presence of divine peace. If you're in touch with that, I mean, you don't have to be the teacher's pet. You know? You don't have to go to every single meeting and try to jostle in there with the other holy beings, you know, to try to be first in line. What's the point? There, you know, in Hajj, in the Islamic religion, there's a place where you go around seven times. Interestingly enough, seven times. I've done it. In fact, I used to live in Mecca. I went to Mecca U. I still have my student body card. I was about 23. They had a track, so I ran around that. But I saw a lot of weird stuff. And I was with, because it was a holy place, you know, it was, well, interesting. So I saw a lot of people jostling each other, you know, crowding in to get to the holy this and the holy water and the holy stone and all that stuff. And I was an American, you know, sort of. I said, oh, what is this stuff? You know, people are acting really awful. So we're going around, the sheikh took me by the sleeve, he often did that, and pointed up and said, look up there, Bilal, look at the sky. And there was the shadow of the throne of God with angels going around it under his, you know, auspices. I don't usually see this stuff. And he says, you know, that's the real Hajj. That's the real pilgrimage. You know, don't be too concerned with the shadows down here because you aren't looking in the right direction. Your eye, the eye of the heart, isn't open. You're still looking with the physical eye. So the Marad actually becomes a mystic. That's when you actually see through the veil and it doesn't go away. You can be trained to do this. And then you can just bear, you know, you can start to help people out of their pain because you know who they really are. They say, I'm a poor this with a miserable that and a cancerous this who has this history. And you look into their heart and you see the light in their heart. You know who they really are. They themselves don't know who they are, but you see it. And you help them see it. And when you do that, you go from being a Marad to a sheikh, what's called a teacher or a murshid. You can actually guide people out of their own stuff. Of course, it's no longer you who does this, but you watch it happen. And you help. You can actually be of service to humanity in this way without trying to help yourself or do other things. Or, you know, we used to watch these guys come in the gate, in the courtyard of San Quentin. And they were what you call the do-gooders. They'd come through the gate with a certain attitude called, oh, what a good boy am I. I'm helping these poor, you know, oppressed servants, you know. A lot of them in Marin, I noticed. So you can smell them from 10 miles away. It's that righteous, you know, stuff. They're not really serving others selflessly like Mother Teresa. They're really building their own egos by helping others. You can smell it a mile away. It's funny that the prisoners also can sense it too. Those guys last about a week. Nobody comes from their class and they leave. You know, they come through the gate with a certain arrogance saying, I sure hope you guys appreciate me coming in here, taking off work from my $1 million condo or whatever they have in Marin, helping you pour down, you know. It's like that. Everybody can sense that. But when you're selfless, when you've been refined, your ego has been refined by this time to such a state that you're actually capable of helping without attachment, without asking for anything, without thinking, oh, I'm such a good person, aren't I? I mean, I give people stuff, and they usually don't deserve it, I noticed. You know, this thought comes like, well, they didn't thank me. You know, they don't really appreciate what I do for them. And that's not what a morshid does. A morshid, I asked a big, I shouldn't say this, but I asked a big sheikh, what is it like being a morshid? You know what he said? It was in a room like this. He said, Bilal, if you lie down across the threshold, along the threshold, face up, and every parade that comes in the door steps on you, and you don't say, ouch, or why'd he step on my face? Couldn't he, like, step over? If you get to be that state, you'll be a sheikh. And I think, thank God I'm not a sheikh. I'm not ready for that. I'd like think, phew, at least he could wash his feet or something. You know, I have all these thoughts. Something. Couldn't they be like a better quality Marid? Like, couldn't they be at least a little richer or something? If that's it, you're not a morshid. A morshid gives and gives and gives and gives. No, it's mutlak. It means unconditional. What are we on now? Sheikh? Is that five? Oh, good. That's why I didn't do math. I did languages. You can tell why. Can't count to seven, but... a sheikh, and then comes... what comes next? A wali. Wali Allah. It's translated as friend of God, lover of God, someone who's so close to Allah, really. Allah is close to them. There's a tradition that said, if my servant walks toward me a step, I walk toward that servant 10 steps. If he comes a foot, I come a yard. If he comes a span, I come a furlough, or whatever it's called. If he comes to me walking, I come to him running. If you just crawl towards Allah with all your faults, Allah will rush toward you. That is infinite love. Love that we can't even conceive of. We have no idea what God's love is really like. There's nothing in the world that's really close to this except one thing. They say one thing, there's nothing that's close to it, but if there's one thing, it's a mother's love for the child. You call it Rahma, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim, like the Quran I read. There's one thing in all the world that's like this love. It's described as rahmah. It's a, I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's the relationship of a fetus to the mother's body in the womb. That's the exact linguistic definition. I can't describe it in English because love or compassion sound rather cold to me. But in the original Semitic language, rahama in Hebrew and rahma in Arabic, it's an exact meaning. It's the relationship of the fetus in the womb of the mother, the body of the mother. That's the relationship. There's nothing that comes close to it, but for us who have to understand things, that's it. That's what a wali is. That's exactly what a wali is. The precise definition. It's the closest we can get to understanding it. I don't know what it feels like. In fact, I don't know what it feels like to be pregnant, come to think of it. But that is precisely your relationship to God, that of a fetus in the body of the mother. That's what a wali feels like. That's his relationship or her relationship, waliya or wali, to the beloved. Very, very intimate. I tried to translate these words once, kind, tender, compassionate. Nothing really does it. The original is so exquisite, you know. It's so human. It's so exquisitely physical as well as spiritual. So that's how a wali feels for everyone. A sheikh is responsible for, or murids, a murshid is responsible for murids. So they have a group and they have a setup and he's responsible. But a wali isn't like that. A wali is like a bodhisattva, you know, feels that kind of compassion towards everything. Everything, everybody, regardless of race, religion, gender, economic class, nationality, what group you're in. The wali is so close to God. And when the wali comes that close to God, he reaches the seventh and last stage. And that's ashik. In Farsi, ashikan, from ishq. The true lover. The highest stage of spiritual accomplishment, according to this way, is love. You actually experience something called fana fileh. You might have heard about it. You are annihilated in the very love of God. It completely overwhelms every thought, word, and deed. The very being called wujud, the very being of a lover, is God's love. Says the sacred tradition says, I become the eye by which you see. I become the ear by which you hear. I become the hand by which you grasp. I become the foot by which you walk. And the Sufis say, I become the heart by which you love. God's heart is your heart. You love with God's love. That's the ashik, the very highest state. In that state, there is no space for other. There is no space for other. It's complete and of itself. It is eternal love. Thank you so very much for your kind attention. Thank you for Sheikh Llewellyn and the Omega Institute for giving this poor dervish a chance to come and share this evening with you. It truly has been an honor and a pleasure. I never expected so many people. And I appreciate your quiet and kind attention. It's been a long evening. I'm sure you're ready to rest. So I'm going to do the same thing. Could we end with a prayer? Those who chant it, those who know it can chant it, and those who don't know it can fake it. And I'll tell you how. Just go E. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah ar-Rahim. God will understand. You know, it'll sound okay. So let's try it. You know the E part?
Yeah, I know the E.
Okay. You're great as a straight man. فاتحة اللهم صل على سيد محمد وعلى آل سيد محمد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا Peace and the blessings of God be with you. Thank you so much.